Hello, and welcome to the Learning College. My name is Alex Linder, and you can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com, permanently archived. Today, we're going to resume with The Eradicator, a 2024 novel by Mike Smith. Check out his Substack. You can find this entire book and other things that he's written. He also drops comments at Kirksville Today, occasionally, which is our daily digest from a white point of view. Today, we're going to do Chapter 9, it's called Threat Control. Chapter 9 out of 24, roughly pages 76 to 90, so a nice sort of average length session. Chapter 9, The Eradicator by Mike Smith. Chapter 9, Threat Control. Jake decided to solve the mystery of why Greta Ondrakova was in the shelter. Something was wrong with her, but he didn't know what it was. While she was parked on the chair, before a volunteer took her to the women's sleeping section, she babbled. She spoke of, quote, true home as a thing she was searching for, because it's my true home. She laughed and looked fearful and angry in fast alternation. The staff and volunteers seemed to take at face value the name she gave herself, Jane Janes. Jake thought, surely even the most down-and-out resident, not to mention the staff, can see that she's the movie star. Maybe the reason they fail to recognize her is that people instinctively reject a truth that's too incredible to accept. Once, he saw her in the commissary, sitting alone and shaking her head in jerks. He hoped it wasn't true, but she looked like a burnout case. He regretted having only a layman's knowledge of drug abuse effects. He asked her why she was in New York. She didn't answer. When he mentioned that he'd never visited California, she said, my mother. Your mother is there? No, we lived there. Did you come to see her? I see her in the clock. She could turn the crazy off and on, depending on who was present. Around staff and volunteers, she had a morose facial expression, and did as she was told, saying only, thank you and excuse me. With fewer people around, she talked to herself. Jake took Lulu's place after she ate with Greta in the commissary once. Greta seemed unable to remember Jake's false name, Sloan, and called him Slum. I see your dad knows, Slum, she said. They ate your real one. He asked her from intuition, is your mother dead? Her blue eyes went slitty with animal hostility. She began shouting, you, you, you. She jumped to her feet. Jake did the same. Suddenly she sat down. He remained standing and watched her resume eating. From then on, she refused to eat with anybody and considered Jake persona non grata. Joey got the brunt of a later outburst. He happened to say in her presence that it wouldn't surprise him if apes joined them in the shelter. She yelled in response, believing that an ape might be in the next room. He tried calming her down by putting his hands on her shoulders. She pushed him back and screamed, I won't abide here or abide it. I won't abide here or abide it. Do you bribe a bride? Do I stutter? Do I bride a bribe? The fact that staff did nothing about these outbursts hurt resident morale. Residents not only avoided Greta, but seemed less willing to speak among themselves. Jake decided to get out the first thing in the morning. But that night, she approached him. Slum, you aren't bald. It's good you're not box. I decided to let you help. What do you want, Greta? She grinned. You know, it's me. I don't know that I can help you. I'm leaving to look for my childhood home. You can help me with that. I feel that you can. He peered into her face. She was standing beside his slab bed, freshly bathed and dressed. She gave the impression, for the first time since he met her, of being the magnetic presence that appeared on screens throughout the world. Your childhood home, where is it? He asked. Her confidence collapsed. She looked again like the feral young woman the shelter knew. It must be there. Where? She said nothing further and moved off in the direction of the women's sleeping section. At breakfast in the commissary, she slapped his shoulder. Sorry about last night, Slum. Just thought I'd ask. Okay, Greta. James. Janes, J-A-N-E-S. She corrected him with a kind of quirky smirk. Janes, not Greta. Before he could leave, the upgrade to the shelter began. It started with police officers stationing themselves throughout the place. When Conrad and little Ralph approached an officer, he ignored their questions. Other cops emerged from rooms in the back, gripping residents by the arms and seeming to have them under arrest. Jake sensed that this police presence had no single target. A cop approached him and said, "You have to leave. All residents must go. Permanently. The city has upgraded this building to a campus." "For university students?" Jake asked, confused. "For apes," answered the cop. "You need to leave now, sir." Greta appeared at Jake's side. "Slum, what is it?" Thinking quickly, Jake said to the cop, "She doesn't have shoes on. I'll go find them for her and we'll go." He grabbed Greta's hand and pulled her along, headed for the women's sleeping section. The city's upgrade consisted of dumping the homeless in the street and replacing them with apes. Jake could smell them now, an animal mustiness coming from the back of the building. He saw a pompadoured handler walking in the hallway and then looked at Greta putting on her shoes. Angry anxiety contracted her face, and he could see that she didn't know as yet why she felt that way. He pulled her to her feet fast. "We're leaving to find your childhood home, right now. Whatever you say." Seconds later, they were out the door and on the sidewalk. There, the other residents were gathered. Some had shuffled away, but most were standing around and complaining, unsure what to do. He knew what to do. His future started with helping Greta to find her family. From there, he might have a shot at life. He saw no staffers, just two volunteers who looked as clueless as the residents. But they too slipped away soon. The staff cleared out probably last night. They must have known of the quote-unquote upgrade. That would explain why they did nothing during the past week. The last thing he saw before leading Greta away was a bent, fatherly figure helping to bring out some of the belongings of the other residents. It was Robert Jr. Paragraph break. New scene. Chad had to do something to protect Greta. Failing to fight for his future wasn't an option. What to do is find allies, he thought. He needed an organization and a TL, a team leader. The Army taught him that every country, regardless of its size, had insurgents, whether active or not. Undergrounds, bad or good, existed everywhere. That fact worried him in Iran 5 years ago. Now it gave him confidence that there's always an underground if you can find contact with it. He got to thinking about how to join the American underground, whatever it was. He bypassed the motel server after 2 days and nights of fumbling but persistent effort. Remember, he's still in the hotel watching the TV with the apes and the interracial crap and all the rest of it. No one would call his hacking skills good, but the Army had taught him the rudiments as part of a basic training. He got on the so-called dark web. The first website he found set the pattern for almost everything else that he saw on this supposedly forbidden part of the internet. The site only seemed to oppose great ape integration. The words, "People for Common Sense," glowed at the top of the screen. People for Common Sense objected merely to GAIs taking effect so soon. "Everyone agrees," the mission statement pleaded, "that great apes suffered oppression for thousands of years. But let's have some common sense. Why the rush? What is wrong with natural assimilation? Don't the challenges created by an overhasty implementation of GAI deserve at least some attention, in all fairness? The shock of change is too fast for most people to take. There was not enough consultation with local community organizations on how to put this thing over smoothly, without resistance." Close quote. Chad considered these objections weak. "Who are these cowards?" he thought. He found the organizers' names at the bottom of the landing page. Myers, Hartman, Pearl. And there, right inside the disclaimer, "We reject violence and anti-Semitism," was a notice reading, "People for Common Sense is a 501c3 organization." In other words, it was the echo chamber again, part of the system. He tried another website. The people who ran it called themselves Bible Humans. Because the government called humans terrorists, then this name seemed promisingly insurgent. If they dared to use the word human, then they might be insurgents against the system. Jesus Christ, the landing page said, is no ape. Where in the Bible does it say humans should mix with apes? More of the same followed on the Articles of Faith page. There, Chad read, great ape integration is a Darwinist plot. The idea seemed to be that secular humanists got up GAI to reject God's plan. God didn't want racial mixing. God's plan was man having dominion over the beasts of the land, sea, and air, so putting humans on all fours with them was blasphemy. Chad frowned. That was holy roller shit. He felt even more contempt when he saw the stuff about forgiving apes for their sins. If an ape killed or injured his family, the godly man didn't kill the ape. According to Bible humans, he prayed for it instead. Chad saw on the About Us page the disclaimer, quote, we reject violence and anti-Semitism, but found nothing about 501c3 charity status. He moved on. The next site he studied blazed with graphics. Welcome to Truth Tellers, yelled a husky dude in a video that kept popping up. Chad saw almost nothing about GAI here. Mostly the site pumped every weird theory ever heard of. The blame for the world's sorry state, according to the site, belongs squarely to Illuminati, Masons, creatures from outer space, other dimensional demons, and something called the Fourth Reich. A featured article claimed that energy beams from UFOs warped gullible minds. Chad found only one statement about GAI. If you believe people and apes should mix, you probably also believe the Earth is round. The whole site seemed phony. When he saw the practically trademarked, quote, we reject violence and anti-Semitism disclaimer, he knew they wouldn't do shit. So the Christians, the Alex Jones type, and the conservatives, he's showing them they're all united, being educational foundations created by and for the system. Fake opposition, fake resistance, fake rebellion. He punched goddamn monkeys into a search engine. The first hit site was a site called Monkey and Round. The site told jokes about bonobos, chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans. One joke was, how many apes does it take to screw in a light bulb? Answer, none. These beasts can't do shit. Chad spent a few minutes enjoying the jokes. He liked their illegality best of all, but he couldn't call this the website of an organization. It was nothing. He typed, I hate gorillas, into the search engine. Only one link caught his eye. It said, kill them all. He clicked it. Suddenly, the laptop glitched. He had to restart it 3 times before the browser worked again. The site loaded at last and appeared to be what he was looking for. Kill 'em all recommended assassinating great apes. The site didn't explain or argue. It said, kill. And it told how, giving instructions for making IEDs, scopes, mortars, and missile launchers, and detailing urban warfare tactics. Much of this material came from U.S. Army combat manuals. He didn't have to look for who ran the site because the solid information spoke for itself and there was an organization to join. The site listed an email address in a post office box. He wondered if he should get in touch. He went out for food. He had used the nearby gas station for a takeout restaurant, buying sandwiches and carrying them to his motel room. He wore a cap low on his forehead for some protection against the station's cameras. He had backed his car almost flush with the motel building, making it harder for strangers to get his license plate number. The motel had the number, but probably didn't care about it. Page 81 now. After returning with dinner to his room, he turned on the TV. A news report came on. The Libertarian Party had something to say about GAI. The party condemned any, quote, blue noses who were annoying enough to have a problem with GAI and recommended that they focus instead on, quote, freedom, end quote, getting a job, because a valuable life consisted of, quote, creative destruction. The openly homosexual spokesperson then kissed a chimpanzee on the mouth. Another report trumpeted federal authorities breaking up the Human Rights Coalition, although the reporter only implied that the president of this old politically liberal group was disappeared. He said that the other members of the group were jailed for humanism. Humanism is a crime, preferring humans to apes. A third report celebrated Homes for Humanities, changing its name to Homes for All. The charity's new patron, an Israeli billionaire, promoted something he called, quote, campuses. The report didn't say what that was. No report lasted more than a minute. Then a fourth report came on, something terrible. Authorities were abducting children coast to coast. Child Protective Services was removing children from homes for showing uncooperativeness, quote unquote, toward apes. It's not enough to tolerate, the reporter editorialized in a sanctimonious tone. All must love great apes. The children's specific offenses included inappropriate averse reaction, which seemed to mean fear or shyness, selfishness, meaning failure to defer to apes, and violence, meaning asking any ape-related question. Quote, like innocence, curiosity is a code word hiding humanism, opined the reporter. So the literal criminalization of any attitude or action or response or feeling that doesn't line up with ideology and the society they're trying to engineer. It's all illegal and criminal and can get you murdered, disappeared, or thrown in jail. The report didn't specify where authorities took the children. Chad went online to look for details about this. A standard news service affirmed government detention of humanist children without trial, he noticed, and so without possibility of defense or appeal. I misintoned that. Without trial, he noticed. They're taking these children, but they're not giving them a trial, so you can't defend or appeal. That confirmed that the government considered them as terrorists. And terrorists were held more often in black sites, meaning prisons in locations not revealed to the public. The parents likely weren't even told where the children were. He went to the Kill 'Em All site and sent an email asking to join. Within an hour, he received a response. It said that he must be vetted in person. After writing down the provided street address, he washed his clothes in the bathtub and used the room's hair dryer on them, packed the laptop, then checked out of the motel and drove off. Watching his car leave the parking lot, the motel manager made a phone call. He said only two words, threat controlled, and ended the call. And I spoke wrongly. That is the end of chapter 9, so we're going to do chapter 10 as well. I thought we were on 10. No, we're doing 9 and 10 today. Chapter 10, True Home. Walking away from the shelter, Jake asked Greta, how did you get to New York? She frowned, we're here already. I mean, let's leave the same way. Her frown deepened, but that would mean going back to where I came from. Jake said patiently, that's California, isn't it? Your true home? I don't know how to get there. She began punching his arm repeatedly as hard as she could. You're supposed to know how to help me. You. In one movement, he took her arms and held them behind her. She looked at him with wide eyes and was quiet. He said, let's first get out of New York. We can take the bus, she suggested, drawling. Isn't that obvious? He let go of her arms. That's better. He almost asked, do you have the fare? Since he had no money, but he thought better of it. Instead, he let her precede him in line at the bus station, where she paid by taking the money from her sock. No one recognized him on the bus. That was because of two optical illusions, as Jake knew. First, he had a different face, and secondly, her evident identity was too incredible. On the New Jersey Transit line, the bus took them into Passaic County. Can you remember anything about True Home? Jake asked. Greta looked out the window sadly. They erased it, but it's there. Where? She didn't answer. Later, he saw her take a pill bottle from her pocket. She opened the bottle and, in one throw, swallowed a white pill from it. "Don't you need water with that?" he asked ironically. She said nothing. He wondered, what did she take? Is she addicted to those pills? "What'd you just swallow?" he asked. "My meds." "Which are?" She didn't even look at him. "I'm a homicidal maniac. If I don't take my meds, I'll hurt you." Jake's working hypothesis, for which he had no data, only a hunch, was that this medication didn't solve but caused her problems. He resolved to wean her off it. He watched the various buildings, including motels, pass. Staying overnight at a motel seemed possible, since she had money, and many people didn't recognize her, but her money was cash, and not even the sketchiest dives accepted that now. On Route 23 near Newfoundland, almost an hour into the ride, she cried out, "Here!" She pointed at something outside the window, jabbing her finger on the pane and tracing something on it. As far as the eye could see, there was farmland broken only by banks of trees. "What is it, Greta?" She climbed over him and headed for the front of the bus. "Stop here," she ordered the driver. The driver made some sounds of protest. "I have to get off here, you bastard. I'm having a heart attack," she shouted. Jake restrained her and told the driver, "Better let her off. I'll take care of her." From the roadside, Jake and Greta watched the departure of the bus. She ran into the fields. He followed her. There was nothing but a bank of trees near them. Her pace slowed. He caught up to her and said, "Well?" She frowned in confusion. Then she pointed into the distance at a large barn and a farmhouse. He took her by the hand and they walked for the farmhouse. "No, all wrong. It isn't here," she muttered. He looked at her. "Not your home?" She shook her head. "No." "Greta, a good way to find it is to look at a map and..." A voice cut Jake off. "Hi, you guys lost?" Jake turned and saw a tall, thin man wearing a brown jacket and mud-splattered jeans. He had gray hair, blue eyes, and a jutting chin. "Car broke down," Jake said. "Yeah, the car broke down right here in the middle of the road," Greta echoed. "I swear I wasn't drunk." "We're brother and sister." "Brother and sister, yeah, that's true." Jake tried to continue. "We're going to New York." Greta came up offering money to the man, who was evidently the owner of the property. "Can we stay the night with you? We saw a crazy girl and another one who had a vampire bat. The box hated it." "Is that too much, sis?" Jake asked, seeing the five $100 bills in her fist. "No, bro," she said. The man put his hands in his hips. $500 for one night? "The bat or the girl, well, he threw us from our house," Greta explained. "The bat, it was hard to see in the box. They dehoused us for apes and..." "For a campus, you mean?" the man asked. "She's a little slow," Jake explained. "She wanted to stretch her legs. We can find a hotel." "My legs are none of your business," Greta snapped. The man nodded. "Name's Groat. Hans. You two are welcome to stay in a furnished room in the barn. G-R-O-T-E. It's kind of a guest room for when the grandkids visit." He had already taken the money and tucked it in a pocket inside his jacket. "Will you be wanting breakfast tomorrow, too?" "Two." "I never eat breakfast," Greta said. "Thank you," said Jake. "Yes, we will take breakfast." As they walked to the farmhouse, Groat said, "Shame about those campuses. It seems like the whole world's..." He seemed reluctant to finish the sentence. "Gone crazy?" Jake said. "I don't hate great apes, don't get me wrong. I'm all for helping them overcome their oppression in any way I can, but..." "I agree," Jake interrupted. "GAI is insanity, the whole program." Groat looked at him sharply. "You think so?" And then he added quietly, "So do I." He ushered the two into the farmhouse. His wife, a graying lady who said almost nothing and smiled less, served them a late lunch. Groat talked as his two guests ate. He talked about GAIs harming something he called civil liberties, an old-fashioned term which Jake hadn't heard since childhood. Mainly, though, he spoke of his own shock that so many people seem to support GAI. "Even my own neighbors are for it." I said to one of them, I said, "Henry, would you hire an orangutan to milk your cows or take produce to market?" He told me he would, even if it injured his cows or ended his farm. Everybody I know is like him. I just can't understand it. Jake suggested, maybe it's mass psychosis. Groat snorted, I don't believe in psychology. It must have something to do with animal behavior. As Mrs. Groat washed the dishes and gave them to Greta to dry, the men talked about animal behavior. Jake compared the madness of crowds and the flock behavior of birds. There are rules governing how a flock flies. One of them is every bird follows the seven birds closest to it. It's instinct. They move as if they're sending radar signals to each other. Like bats, Groat said, or like baitfish. And the multiplication of these tunings makes a sort of hive mind. That explains a flock's undulations. There may be a genetic basis to it. I've given it a lot of thought. Groat looked at him. Are you a zoologist? No. What do you do? From her place at the sink, Greta volunteered an answer. Nothing now. I'm looking for a job, Jake explained. I've noticed something, said Groat, about termites. We had a problem with them here, didn't we, Martha? We did, his wife answered, sitting down at the table, less to listen to Groat and Jake than to rest. You see, Groat said, termites in a hive communicate chemically. What did the man call it? It had something to do with their nervous system. He mentioned a term, swarm intelligence. The mechanisms of eusociality aren't well understood, Jake said. Like the opposite of antisocial, eusocial, you meaning good, the prefix. Euphemism, a good instead of the accurate or bad thing. Well, I understand one thing, said Groat. We killed them all and thus ended our termite problem. And that ended our termite problem. We killed them all. They moved to the bric-a-brac heavy living room. Nowadays, Groat sighed, standing beside a large bookshelf and eyeing the books, I don't often get a chance to read, not the way I used to. Jake obligingly looked at the darkly bound tomes. The authors were Kant, Hegel, Emerson. All that philosophy, and then he kills pigs by the half dozen, Martha cracked. Got to, Groat said. Jake seconded him. Nature culls the herd if people don't. 90% of species that ever lived have gone extinct. If only it would extinct the apes, Groat said almost under his breath. We should do it, Greta said. Cull the herd. Groat and Martha laughed. Jake said, the real problem is cowardice. Right, noted Groat, and stupidity. Kill the stupids, Greta exclaimed. Worry seized Groat's features. No, he said firmly, people aren't animals. We can't apply the law of the jungle to human beings. Nature does, said Jake. Neanderthals and other branches of hominins fell to predators which included even other kinds of hominins. Groat shook his head. It's our moral imperative that shall overcome evil. Martha said to Jake, oh, don't get him started. Groat was continuing. You see, I believe in the transcendent realm. As human beings, our job is to subordinate ourselves to it. That means rejecting materialism, including biological determinism. The earthly representative of the transcendent is the state. All solutions must come from it. That's reason. Jake wanted to answer, how reasonable is the government now? But he stopped himself because he didn't want to offend their hosts. Martha showed Jake and Greta to the barn. The last they saw of Groat was his doing the sanctity ritual. He got on all fours and licked the carpet three times, thrice repeating, I lick the filth of the earth. The form of the sanctity ritual came from a World War II incident where Ukrainian torturers forced a Jew named Cy Braverman to lick the ground. The well-established fact that Braverman never even visited the Ukraine and was exposed as a hoaxer years ago didn't matter, certainly not to Groat. He got up and carefully entered the record of his compliance into the official government tracking website. As he said, flipping on to 88, a loft apartment was in the barn. Though smallish, the loft had central air, a washroom, a kitchenette, with new appliances, a futon, and a bed with a spring mattress. The grandkids stay here when they visit, Martha explained. Our house is too small for everybody. You could rent this, Jake said. We do, sometimes, Martha said. We just don't want to rent it, she stopped. To apes, I understand, Jake said. They would wreck it. Are you leaving tomorrow? Yes, Jake answered. Where are you going, Martha? Greta asked her in a worried voice. Martha turned to the door. You'll be fine, dear. Be in for breakfast before 7. I'll see you then, Greta said. As soon as Martha left, Greta had the TV on. She was scanning the channels. What are you looking for? Jake asked. Me. On hunch, he asked. Is TV the box? Everything is the box. The box isn't everything, though, he said, and she frowned. She started to turn the TV off, but he stopped her. He looked for news reports about himself, about Jake McAllister, fugitive. None appeared. Evidently, the two weren't newsworthy today. Jake turned the TV off and said, Greta, my real name isn't Sloan, it's Jake McAllister. Sloan is just a name I made up so that I could stay in the shelter, like the name Jane Janes. Who the hell is Jane Janes? She said. Don't you remember? It was your fake name. I remember, Slum. Don't lose your sense of humor. She smiled hugely. Without a sense of humor, what's the use of living? You might call me Jake. Jake, did you work with animals like I did? He got her ironic joke. Apparently, she didn't like the film industry. No, different kinds of organisms. I'm a scientist. They didn't like me, so... She cut him off. You lied to me. He had to nod. Yes. She looked suspicious of him. You aren't bald, though. I'm wanted by the police, he resumed. My face is different because... She cut him off again by flopping down on the bed, saying, You're sleeping on the futon, Slum. By the way, where are your pills? He asked. But she was sleeping already. Paragraph break. Chad pulled his car into the parking lot of the mini mall. The flaking paint and empty windows of the mini mall told him that it had died and was abandoned some time ago. The only storefront with some life in it belonged to a Mexican restaurant. He could see something moving behind the iron bars in its windows. It took 2 days of driving to reach this town. Bramble, Arizona appeared, now at midday, to be abandoned also. The mini mall was the center of a big nothing. Two mid-sized white sedans were the only cars in the lot, and he parked beside them. This address was the meeting place. Chad carefully concealed his laptop under the front seat. He found the restaurant's door unlocked. The booths were vacant and had red and torn upholstery. The kitchen in back contained one cook, a non-Mexican man. The only server on duty, a Mexican woman, seated Chad facing the front. He saw three tall young men outside through the front windows and the glass front door. They appeared to consult with each other. One entered and proceeded directly to Chad's booth and sat down opposite him. Like the others, this young man was noticeably fit and had an almost military bearing. You're Bingham? I'm Chad Bingham. You're from the internet? The young man nodded, yes. Call me Josh. How do I sign up? Josh was looking him over. Is that from the war? He asked. Zagros Mountains, IED. The leg, too. We saw you when you came in. Josh had an air of decisiveness. We normally do vetting, but we can skip it in your case. The other young men were no longer there, but Chad pointed at the front door. Are they yours? He asked. Let's go, replied Josh. He stood up and Chad followed him out. Chad asked no further questions. The other two had already left in one of the cars. Josh and he headed west in Josh's. Kill 'em all headquarters in an amateur-built ranch house. Josh said an uncle willed it to him. Kill 'em all headquartered in an amateur-built ranch house. Not visible, their nearest neighbor's place was behind a rocky cliff 500 yards away. The others had arrived. They were Byron and Steve. Josh ordered them, let's get him into training. They fed Chad a bunch of leftover stew and assigned him a bunk and a rifle. And that's where chapter 10 ends, on middle of page 90. So we're about halfway through, and he's now established contact with the underground and set up for maybe some fight back, we might be thinking at this point. Anyway, that's where we'll leave it for this session. I've been Alex Linder, reading to you out of The Eradicator by Mike Smith, permanently archived at vnnforum.com. Thanks for being with me, and I'll be back with you again real soon.